Yeah, jet lag, jet lag, jet lag. I know what that's like. Yeah, I know what it's like to want it all. I was born a bomb, making Lamborghini engine sounds, pedaling my bike. Lusted that luxury life since a tight. Switches on the Monte Carlo, turn the car into a trike. These images was burned in my mind. Chasing that paper like it stole something of mine. It did though. Friends killed over small bills, I still go. Hard spitting balls for them folk. Life so fragile with the big bucks.
Hello, family. Could it be we stayed away too long? This is Joel in Atlanta, and this is the Out of the Loop podcast, good for the week of July 1st through the 7th. We've got a full four-man crew. We've got three topics, and we've all got hot sports opinions. I am joined by Ed and Austin. Ed, what's up?
What's really good, man? I'm out here trying to get my tough mutter on. Hit the track today and got a PR on my two-and-a-half-mile joint, so okay. I'm looking on the up.
Good stuff. Good. What is it? Well, you don't have to tell us or whatever. You don't have to tell. I mean, if you want to tell us, fine. If not, whatever. We're putting the pressure on people.
Under 9 minute miles.
Okay, that's a bet. Especially, long distance, dog. That's good stuff. All right.
A PR. I like your Olympic slang in this year of the.
Yeah, you got to get on our Olympic slang.
Considering my big shout out coming at the end to the Beast. I'm in full Olympics mode. Lochte getting shook by the what's your boy, the swimmer?
Phelps.
Yeah, Phelps. He beat Phelps the first time around. Phelps then won the last two, so they got a little back and forth going. U.S. track and field can't get it right. They got a tie for the women's 100, and they talking about flipping coins.
Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, we got to talk about that. We got to talk about that. But yeah, well, all right. Well, nah, little my boy getting his PR in. Good stuff, bro. And. What about B? B, you had your PR this weekend? B in Los Angeles, by the way, for everybody who's joining us.
I can't say that I have, but I'm just happy to be here, man. This is a great Sunday. First LeBron, now the BET Awards, man. I just don't know what to do with myself right now.
Black Star Power. Isn't this the end of Black Music Month, by the way? Is this what's today, July?
We have that?
I thought we only talked about black people in February.
Yeah, right.
Are we not breaking the rule?
Well, June is a month of only 30 days, so that could make sense.
I forgot. We get Juneteenth.
Juneteenth, so I was going to say, you can't.
Yeah, we get February and June.
It's a good hot month for barbecue, you know what I'm saying?
He said, hey, give them the shortest month and we'll celebrate the whole month, and give them the hottest month with the short days and remind them of home.
That's what I'm saying, man. We couldn't do it in July. You don't want to celebrate black folks on the 4th of July. But I shouldn't do that.
I'm feeling good, man. All that happened, Juneteenth, LeBron, BET Award, all in one month, man. I'm feeling good. I can't complain.
That's hype. That's hype, man. That's my boy. Yeah, dog, we hype, man. It's good to.
Yeah, I call that the trifecta, my 2012 trifecta.
Yeah, man. It's all downhill from here, I'm sure.
July's going to suck.
Right. No doubt. Well, show, and let's go to the H and holler at that boy Shep, who's still out of the loop, even though he's in Houston. What's going on, bro?
What up? Two things real quick. I got a PR today on the old elliptical, because the heart rate monitor wasn't working right, and it kept it low the whole time, so it was making my workout harder than it should have been the whole time. So I burned more calories today than I had previously done. So yeah, your boy hit a smooth 960 calories in an hour.
Damn, were you on like an hour and a half?
No, nah, I do 60 minutes, dog. I do 60 minutes. I'm Mike Wallace out this bitch. And then I'm trying to get this BET Awards on BET.com going too. So that might also be another PR as far as, I mean, it's got to qualify somewhere. I'm going to think of a category before the show's over.
No, man, you know what is crazy before, like, I have never been to BET.com. I mean, even I know people hate on BET, but like that should not happen. I mean, even if I'm just throwing some random ass clicks their way, I should have come across BET.com for something, right? Like, they got some old hits from the streets reruns on there. Or...
they had AJ and Free on the show today. Yeah, right. You never know what kind of clips they have online. I got to be honest. Other than days like today, like when the BET Awards happens, I never go to BET, the channel, let alone BET.com.
That's a good point. I don't think I ever turned there either. And I mean, it's not. Yeah. What is on there? What is on there? Do they still have Team Summit?
I couldn't spell BET if you gave me the B, the E, and the T, dog. Okay.
Cousin Jeff.
Oh man, that's a bet. Well, yeah, man. Well, good stuff. Well, we just threw BET.com some love, so I feel like we've done our job in the month of Juneteenth. We close out on a good note. But well, yeah, man. We're good. Well, I'm happy everybody's here. It's been too long. It's been a couple of months. We all had things to do. We're finally back at it. Hopefully, we'll be a little bit more regular with the show. And we thank you all for listening. But for episode 39, we've got a lot here. We're going to review the king finally ascending to the throne and the media trolling that was part of his journey to the Larry O'Brien Trophy. We're going to talk about the start of the NBA offseason and focus it a bit on the Rockets, the so-called Dork Elvis, and Ed's inexplicable anger at his team building strategy. And last but not least, we're going to discuss college football finally moving into the 20th century and the 21st century and giving its frustrated fans the ending that they've always wanted. But before we get into the show, we should just tell everybody how they can get to the podcast. You should go to the iTunes store, click on podcast, and then do a search for Out of the Loop, then subscribe, then tell hundreds of people. You can also hit up our Tumblr, which is ootloop.tumblr.com. That's ootloop.tumblr.com. And Tumblr is spelled T-U-M-B-L-R. We're also on Twitter, which is at ootloop610. That's ootloop610. And also comments, questions, suggestions, whatever. Hit us up on our email account, which is ootloop@gmail.com. ootloop@gmail.com. I think we're just going to get right into it. Let's start off talking about the NBA finals. We're you know, at this point, we're a couple weeks behind. But anyway, by this point, everybody who cares about sports should know that LeBron James and the Miami Heat won their first title in the second year of their grand big three experiment. They beat the OKC Thunder in five games. It once setting off an exceedingly joyous post-game celebration. It was really interesting. It was hard for me to remember a time that I've seen somebody like as giddy as Bron on the sideline. And also possibly killing off one of the silliest sports narratives of my lifetime. And actually, Josh Levine of Slate writes, quote, "Given that basketball is resolutely a team game, an individual's championship trophy haul shouldn't be the sole determinant of his legacy. How many titles would Magic Johnson have won, after all, if he was playing alongside Zydrunas Ilgauskas and Larry Hughes rather than Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and James Worthy? Even though it doesn't make sense, LeBron James and the LeBron James analysis industry have always agreed on one thing. If you're not first, you're last." That's end quote. So that sounds more appropriate for Ricky Bobby than LeBron, right? But at any point, B mentioned something in some emails earlier this week while watching an ESPN college football show, sort of summing up the analysis around sports and you know, some of the things we've heard about LeBron. And B, do you want to take it on from here?
Yeah, man, you mentioned it was what you call one of the silliest narratives of our lifetime. And the narrative is what bothers me so much, and spearheaded by the one and only Skip Bayless, and also taken on by a lot of his media cohorts in one way or another. It's just the analysis is not really analysis, and it never was, of LeBron James. It was always something along the lines of he's not a winner, he's not clutch, stuff that's more psychoanalysis than it is basketball analysis. And none of these guys have any kind of degrees in that kind of field, to my knowledge. But for some reason, Skip Bayless and the like feel that not only do they have or are empowered to, but they have the right to talk about what LeBron James feels and thinks in his heart and mind, and speak it as fact, as like absolute fact, which is ridiculous at minimum and insulting that ESPN gives them a daily platform to spew this back and forth, even Stephen A, and I like Stephen A, but his basketball analysis is zero. And I appreciate it after, I mean, LeBron winning a championship was inevitable. It just was. It was going to happen. And now that it has happened, we can move on with our lives.
Right.
And move on with this narrative. But the day after when Skip Bayless gave that complete, you know, self-serving, you know, standing ovation with it's about time, LeBron. And now you finally done what I've said that you should do. And it was all about Skip Bayless and Stephen A called him out on it. But more so, Mark Cuban called him out for finally saying for basically saying that.
Well, did he even call him out, or did he expose him by asking, like, if you can't answer with a zone, the purpose of a zone, I mean,
exactly. Well, no.
Jalen Rose exposed him. Jalen Rose exposed him.
No, Jalen Rose shamed his ass.
Mark Cuban called him out, and the king is dead. Long live the king. Shout out to LeBron James. But I think at the end of the day, the narrative is here to stay because in large part, there are not a lot of people that if you get into an analytical conversation about sports that will remain tuned in. Sports is kind of an escape for most people in society. And so to get into it at the level that we're talking about, I don't think that most people would tune into that. ESPN recognizes that. And a lot of what we see them put on the air is, you know, folks, what we all would assume is guys sitting around their living room having the conversations that the normal man or woman would have about sports.
But they won't even give it a chance. As long as it's entertaining, I think there's an audience out there for it to be not only taught the game,
but how big
but
is
but explained
audience?
In a way that most of us, not most of us, some of us on the NBA level know, and I'm most disappointed in people like Magic Johnson and John Barry and those guys who played the game, have been in many, many film sessions, practice sessions, have scouting reports, etc. Who
talks about it? Some of the players are some of the worst of these narratives too, though, right? Well, like John Barry and Magic Johnson?
I think that's what B is disappointed in.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, part of that is I'm not sure that, you know, A lot of people, whether they play the game or not, are kind of grounded in, you know, the analyzing
basic basketball from
a nuts and bolts kind of thing. And also, once you're in the media in the way that Magic and John Barry are, you know, you kind of tend to go with the flow of explaining the game through things like clutch and who wants it more and imposing your will and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, while I do think that stuff is important, you know, our need for better, more solid analysis of all the sports we watch, you know, not just basketball, cause this shit is going to change in a few weeks when we start caring about sports again, the football. You know, I think that, you know, I'm on board with all that. But the one thing I do want to point out, and, you know, so that we're not all getting swept away with what has happened with LeBron winning his title and whatnot. You know, last year's finals and his performances during them, particularly in the fourth quarter, that shit happened. Okay. The stuff that happened in the Boston series when he was with Cleveland, when they got taken out, that shit happened.
Yeah, but Cuban did a good job of explaining it.
It's not just LeBron decided
what? Mark Cuban gives.
Do you think LeBron was scared? No, I don't think he was scared, but the fact is
he didn't perform during those situations.
That's the thing, Shep. It's two sides to this coin. There's two different types of sports. You have sports where you can indirectly impact the way others play, basically like golf, you play your game, or track where you run your race. You really have no direct bearing on how someone else performs. And then you have sports like football, basketball, boxing, where you can make somebody play worse or play down to their expectation or potential. And that's something that's part of it. So LeBron James may not have been as aggressive, but the difference was the Dallas Mavericks played a zone, a good zone that kept him on the perimeter, and they had 2 7-footers behind it. So if you were going to drive to the basket, you had to deal with that of which the Oklahoma City didn't have. So while LeBron might have played less aggressive, there are other factors that the other team, and acknowledge that, you're basically sitting on all the work that they put into it.
Look, there's no doubt there's a rationale for what happened. I mean, you know, if the other team had, if those other teams had only had four people on the court playing against LeBron's team that have five, then yeah, he would have gone crazy. Somebody made him something about what was going on made him not perform to the level that we were either accustomed to or expected to seeing. But the point, the point of it is, you know, this sweet release that we're celebrating now, it came from the fact that it didn't come before. So, you know, like it did happen. Like we can't pretend that LeBron didn't have, you know, some of his, probably his best playoffs ever, except for, I guess, like maybe 08, 09 or whatever, when Jesus Christ, he was off the hook that year.
Against the Magic that year, where he averaged like 39, 8, and 5?
07, 09, he went for 35 points, 9.1 rebounds, and 7.3 assists. Okay. This year, he went 30 points, 9.7 rebounds, and 5.6 assists. Like
But those against different opponents, against different schemes. He had different, you know, coaches. He had different teammates. Like, all of those variables come into play, and that's the analysis that I think it's so easy to talk about, oh, he's not clutch, and let's move on to the next segment. It's lazy journalism.
The thing is, he didn't win a championship until this year.
Okay, well, here's the thing.
This is his ninth year, I believe. So, like, you know,
there's a couple of things. There's a couple of things with this. One is that, you know, it's not just lazy journalism; it's lazy sports fandom as well. Because I think, you know, if the market is there for that sort of, like, you know, that sort of analysis, but two, I think the issue isn't that I don't think people were saying that LeBron didn't have a bad finals and that he didn't perform up to the standard. I think the issue, and this is sort of why I sort of like fell in behind and I started being like really defensive about some of the criticisms about LeBron, is that, and yeah, I want to take it there, they started to sound a little bit like black pathology wrapped up in sports analysis. Like, would LeBron is mentally weak. LeBron is a coward. LeBron, you know,
didn't have a daddy.
Yeah, he didn't have a daddy.
That ever applied to any other players that proved themselves? So it's, I don't know. It's overreaching.
That don't make it right. That don't make it right.
Yeah, right.
And it's still not analysis.
He didn't want it as much. LeBron is selfish. He wanted to take the easy way to the championship.
Yeah, that's not analysis. You know,
frame a little bit. This isn't just germane to sports. It's the same thing we get with our political analysis. It's the same thing with business analysis, and so much so it's further worse. And then I feel like it's a lot of what we get in school. A lot of people aren't necessarily geared, or I don't know that we encourage in our current society that people be hyper analytical and critical.
Well, and when do we ever encourage that?
Present that in the format of the media, you're going to have a lot of people tune out. If we're going to say, you know, this black pathology deal where LeBron's lazy, the general populace when it comes to analysis is lazy. So to present shows in that format, you're going to get a lot of people boo, like my boy Ryan.
That doesn't mean I have to accept C-level stuff. Like,
and we should push back
better.
And we should push
call
back
out for better
and make people aware of that.
You have to, because even though it's something that you want, you don't speak for everybody. And so the general public is not going to support your position. And ESPN has to appeal to the masses.
He has
to appeal to the masses and not the exceptional.
But wait a minute. But what's the point? I mean, you still can push for. I mean, that. I mean, this is saying, well, you know, you just have to accept things as they are. I mean, you still, even though I understand that ESPN has a market and an audience that it should serve, that doesn't mean that I shouldn't push back. Or when you hear bullshit, say, no, that's ridiculous. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, I think that people should be free to do that too. Now, obviously, I don't think ratings has anything to do with being right, but people, you know, for whatever reason, they tend to prefer that sort of analysis, or they're engaged by it in some sort of way. I don't even know that they prefer it, but I think that it's the for people that, I'm not going to even say that they know better, but if you feel that it's wrong, and you have a logical argument on your side, I think you're sort of obligated to make that argument at times.
Right, and that's what Stephen A. Smith kept telling Skip Bayless. Hey, some of your points are right, but they're incomplete. And not only are they incomplete, they're woefully incomplete. And I appreciate what Mark Cuban tried to do. And I don't think he went as far as he could have gone or should have gone. I don't blame him because he's not a basketball mind himself. He's basically regurgitating what someone's told him, what he's paying for. It sounded like a coach went up to him and said, we need this kind of analysis. This is the kind of stuff that we're going to do so he could cut the check. And now he's regurgitating. But even in that, Mark Cuban knows way more than what Skip Bayless knows, what Stephen A. knows, because he has access to that information. And that's what I was talking about. I know we had this conversation a long time ago about writers not having all of the information. They just don't. There's not enough access for you to be in on all of the practices, all of the film sessions, all of the scouting reports, all of the meetings where you talk about how you're going to defend the screen. Are you going to go under it? Are you going to trap it? Are you going to hedge it? Are you going to down it? Are you going to double it? What are you going to? I mean, there's millions of ways you can trap it, play it differently at the top of the key than you do at the wing, than you do at the side. I mean, all of that stuff. And that's just a screen and roll, let alone everything else that goes into what has to be done to be successful. And all of that stuff basically gets swept under the rug for the purposes of clutch, heart, will, want to, playing hard, all of which means absolutely zero when it comes to actual basketball analysis.
I agree. But,
I don't agree that it means absolute.
No, it doesn't. Shep, here's what I'm saying. Basically, and Kenny Smith said this best. He said, when I analyze guys, I basically say stuff that you can go to the tape and watch. I can't say a certain guy doesn't want it, or isn't, right. Or is lazy, but I can go to the tape and say, you didn't hustle. Here it is on the tape. You didn't block out. Here it is on the tape. You didn't help provide help defense when you were supposed to. Here it is on the tape. That's analysis. Clutch and want to is not analysis. That's basically opinion and psychoanalysis, which has no business in the sport. It just doesn't.
That's fair.
I'm saying there's two different things. There's two different things. One is analysis. One is psychobabble. And you commingle the two all you want for the purpose of entertainment and ratings. But I'm calling the two out for what they are and what they aren't.
I think to the degree that they're leaned upon, they're certainly overplayed. But I definitely think you can watch a basketball game and, you know, you can glean those things out.
Saying make assumptions. Like I've heard you say like Blake Griffin plays with no honor, and I to some extent agree, but I wouldn't necessarily say like he's dishonorable. That's different than saying, oh, he acts like this when he doesn't get a foul call, which I can go to the tape and show you, versus he has no honor, which there is no physical or empirical evidence to be able to prove any of that.
That's like really the first and only time I've ever like levied that charge against anybody like that. That was a really exceptional case. But
I kind of agree, but I would explain it in a different way than it's currently explained now in the mass media.
Those things that you were railing against and whatnot, like they are, you know, and I do agree with you that they're too heavily relied upon in current sports analysis. But if you wanted to levy those charges against guys truthfully, those things have to be underpinned by what you were saying about Kenny Smith, by things that you can actually point to, like on the tape, you know, you can watch a guy and point to, you know, here, it looked like, you know, your opponent wanted X, Y, and Z outcome more than you wanted the opposite.
But no, you don't even have to say that. Yeah. Say even saying it or phrasing it that way is not necessary. You don't have to say somebody wanted it more.
I think you said
you can say he hustled more than you did, and I can show you this on the tape because he went after this loose ball. Right. He blocked out this on this play. He hustled down the floor on this fast break. That's different than he wanted it more. No, those are two different things.
But you don't have time for all of that in a I don't know how long First Take is, but like a 30-minute to an hour-long show where you're doing 15-minute segments and you're bouncing all over the place, like you don't have time for that specific analysis and display to back up everything that you may or may not know that the analyst or whoever the person speaking is going to say in advance. Like that takes a lot of research. It takes a lot of work. It's significantly cheaper for ESPN to produce this babble that they present that people generally accept.
It's lazy.
If I'm McDonald's, I'm not going to give you steak if you're going to accept this 99-cent nonsense.
Well, here's the thing, though.
Hot dogs still get made.
There's a couple things here, because I think we should move to another part of this conversation real quickly. But I think when you hire Magic Johnson, you're sort of hoping that some of his like basketball analysis is going to come through. You know, and I think after a while, or like when you hire Chris Carter, like, you know, or Mark Schlereth, like, I think the theory is that you hire these guys from the game because they see things in the game that other people don't. And they're not necessarily giving you that.
Right? Can I say that I disagree? So I think you hire those guys because of their name. ESPN has a knack for going out and trying to get like people that were on championship teams, folks from the Patriots, folks from the Broncos, folks from the Lakers that have these followings. And they bring them to the table for viewership. To some extent, those folks may be able to give you more, but the formula is that it's significantly cheaper to not have to do all of the back work to present the point that they're trying to make.
I don't think it's that they can do it, but they don't. I just think that it's just I think some people are better at explaining the game than others.
Yeah.
And I don't think I think, like, for instance, and I'm not picking on Magic because Lord knows I'd love for him to hire me someday. But I just think it's sort of beyond him at times to sort of explain what he sees in the game to other people. And he may not just be gifted. And then, you know, a lot of times what it is, because LeBron started after the game started echoing, well, you know, I was playing the game angry last year. And, I needed to, you know, he started to sort of buy into the redemptive narrative that, you know, whereas I think that eventually he was going to win a championship. You know, eventually he's going to figure it out on the court.
So I will say this, and we'll start talking about his legacy based on that. But the last point I want to make is if they really wanted that, then they would go out and hire coaches. And you'll notice that the only time you see coaches is actually on the sidelines at games in general to break down the game for you. They don't want that that in the Spitfire format.
Well, but they want entertainment. They want entertainment, right?
Exactly. It's entertainment. So to LeBron's legacy, I don't think that this one championship turns the corner for him. I think that he'll get pound from a lot of ex-players, but the fans in general and from polls that I've seen thus far haven't necessarily flipped in his favor. And I think it's in large part as a byproduct of the not one, not two, not three, not four. Because of the way this team came together, the expectation for him is so much greater. And the fact that Jordan and Kobe and many of the other greats have won multiple championships, this one is not enough to set his ship straight.
I guess it depends on what you think his legacy. Like, I think, and I think Charles Barkley has said this, is that that he's a top 10 player. He's going to finish as a top 10 player. And I don't think him winning another title changes that or not, unless his game falls off a cliff going forward here. I mean,
my point is that I think he's in the discussion for greatest player of all time with the Michaels, with the Kobe's.
You think Kobe's in the discussion with LeBron for greatest player all time?
We may have lost him briefly, but
yeah, I think. But yeah,
I think it's maybe fair to start doing that. Absolutely, especially from a statistics, you know, numbers type of perspective and whatnot. Like, yeah, he's certainly getting there.
So his talent is on that level. And until he wins multiple championships, he won't be able to fit into – you can't debate for LeBron against those other guys.
See, I think you can.
Here's what I'm over. One, the debate in of itself. Like, we're talking about an individual debate in a team game. Like, you throw LeBron on the Wizards and, okay, we can't have this debate. You put Magic – with the Clippers, and we can't have this debate. Like, not enough goes into this, you know, who's the best player. LeBron is not Jordan. He's never going to be Jordan. They have different sensibilities. It's just so much that goes into this. Like, I get tired of, like, who's the best Kobe, LeBron, Magic. Like, why can't they all be great in their own way? Like, why can't we just appreciate some of the greatness that people have? Like, why does there have to be the sports debate about splitting hairs over who's the 1, 2, 3 greatest of all time.
Because I think that's part of the appreciation, for better or worse. That's the way you sort of express your appreciation for greatness, by trying to, you know, compare them relative to their peers, right? I mean, that's just...
I don't appreciate Charles Barkley anymore if you say he was better than Karl Malone, or if someone happens to believe that he wasn't. Like, I don't appreciate Kobe any less that, you know, you put him up against Jordan or LeBron or whomever. I mean, some of that has to be done to kind of understand, like, and appreciate what we're watching, who we're seeing, and even historically. But at some point, you get to the point of splitting hairs where you can't, like, LeBron, Magic, and Jordan all play three different positions. What are we really, like, what are we breaking down here? It's not even apples to apples from that standpoint, let alone everything else that comes into play.
Well, it's just right, their overall contributions to the game, overall contributions to winning, how much they dominated. You know, like, you can attempt, but it's a futile attempt.
And I guess to some point, and I understand the debate is fun to have. I'm down to have it. But on some level, like, the vitriol that comes along with it is so pointless to me, because it takes away from our appreciation of all of these guys. Like, it starts to pit one against the other. You got to be team Kobe or team LeBron. You got to be, you know, team Kobe or team Jordan, or one of those two. Like, why? These guys were great enough in their own right to appreciate both and all of them in their own right for their own reasons. And I'd like to try to, at least me personally, I like to try to do that.
Right.
Yeah. Cause, I mean, it's because there's a lot of people out there that hate LeBron right now. And I got to agree with Colin Cowherd on this. After the day after they won the championship, he was like, this is a great day for entrepreneurialism. This is a great day for upper mobility. This is a great day for controlling your own destiny. This is a great day for America, because the guy that did all of those things came from nothing. And I know we hate the narrative, but he came from nothing. And has not only made himself something of himself, but brought his people along with them. And he is the American dream. And if you can't get on board with that, dude has done nothing wrong to anybody. But if you can't get on board with what he's achieved, like, there's something wrong with you. Like, you got to look back at yourself and try to, you know, understand why you hate. Aside from the sports, like, if you're a Laker fan, you like Kobe. I mean, aside from that, but if you just can't appreciate what he's accomplished as a human being, then there's something wrong with you.
Well, here's the thing, and I guess we can kind of close it out on this point. What I would say is that I don't have a problem with people. Like, I really did not like Karl Malone and John Stockton with a passion, like, growing up. Like, I just, you know, I could not stand them. I could appreciate their talent. And I think that's sort of what you're speaking to, B, because, and again, I'm going to hit this point again, and I don't, you know, I'm not running from it. I still think a lot of what LeBron faced was based on, I think it was discomfort with a black man. You know, he's not, I mean, you know, he's not humble. You know, that's kind of the thing that people use to cut at guys. You know, well, you know, Derrick Rose is humble. You know, Kevin Durant is humble. You know, and that's, you know, LeBron is not, you know, shuffling his feet and keeping his head down and talking about being humble. He's not.
Why does he have to be, is the question.
Right. And him taking control of his destiny in the way that he did, and not being apologetic about it, at least initially. And then all the other things that were sort of brought into that. That's why I'm happy that he won. Because, like I said, it wasn't LeBron and the Heat winning as much as it was the arguments against black pathology that I was sort of wanting to see win. And so I'm happy that LeBron won. I'm happy that now I think that we can just start watching basketball again.
Right. And I'm also happy because I've made enough bets around my office. Well, I'm not really going to be buying lunch for myself until August.
Really?
So, I mean,
talking about black people, my black wife held me back by not allowing me to put $1,000 on the Heat. And I gotta call out. We've been arguing about that shit for like a week, by the way. I told you, you
would have got odds, though. It was 1.5 to 1. You would have got 1,500 back.
That's what I'm saying. I was like, girl, I'm telling you, she want to go to New York. I was like, hey, man, that's trip money right there. But all right.
If we're talking about black pathology, is that not a general theme with the NBA and really professional sports in general when we talk about the NBA and the NFL? But doesn't the torch now become bared by Dwight Howard with the way that he's acting? You don't think that it'll just transition from LeBron to Dwight?
We really could have a whole nother segment about Dwight Howard, because actually I was getting into it on Twitter about Dwight Howard today, because I already see it on the horizon what's happening to Dwight Howard, and I don't like it. I don't know about you guys.
I'm not going to say I don't like it. I don't know what you're necessarily pointing to as to what's coming on the horizon. I am very disappointed in Dwight and the way that a lot of this is playing out.
What? Okay.
Well, let's push it to next week.
Yeah, because we can't get it.
We'll make that one next week.
I think people are doing Dwight a disservice, though. But anyway.
Doing Dwight a disservice.
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, Dwight is trying to use his leverage, the very narrow window of leverage that he has as a player. People don't give a shit when franchises like screw players and cut them and in the last year their contracts and shit like that. But Dwight, no, God forbid that he's trying to, you know, navigate this situation. And I don't know who's releasing this information about him, you know, in sort of the negotiations behind the scenes. I'm not sure if it's the people that he's with or the Magic that are working really hard to smear this dude. But
well, I mean, nobody ever releases bad information about themselves. So,
right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Well, I don't know if it's people on his team that are doing him a disservice.
They stand to get money from it, so I doubt that they're doing it either.
Well, I mean, if they're like, well, maybe they don't know any better. I mean, isn't that sort of what the argument about Maverick Carter was? That, you know, they didn't know any better. They didn't know how to manage the situation.
Right. I feel the same way. He's not doing himself any favors either, but we can get into that.
Yeah, let's tee that up next week.
Yeah, man, we're talking about dudes and Busta Rhymes, dog. He back on that cream in the clear, huh? Anyway.
Yeah, looking like Mr. T with all the jewelry.
Yeah, man. But anyway, well, let's get into the second topic then. Let's go there. Okay, let's take a break real quick. I just want to make sure. Is everybody okay? Ed, your connection is okay?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, we just said we were going to take a quick break at the end, and I just wanted to make sure that...
Yeah, we're good. It looks like Ed's been silent for a while from what I've seen. So it looks like we're good to go.
Okay, all right. Well, we can just jump right back into topic two then.
All right.
All right. 5, 4, 3... 2, 1. All right. So our second topic is something that's very near and dear, or at least it once was to all of our hearts, but one of the crew in particular. At the time of this recording, we're now about 20 hours until the start of the NBA's free agent rush. Among the big names on this market are Deron Williams, Roy Hibbert, Eric Gordon, Steve Nash, and Ray Allen. And, of course, teams around the league are also using this time to explore trades for players like Joe Johnson, Luol Deng, and the biggest prize of all, the guy that we just mentioned in the previous topic, Dwight Howard. Notable among those franchises pursuing Howard is our hometown team, the Houston Rockets. And that brings us to the biggest Rockets fan in the crew, Ed, who has been railing against the efforts of general manager Daryl Morey since before it was popular. While Morey was trying to put together the pieces to land Howard for what amounts to a one-year rental, Ed shared to us this blog post from Houston Chronicle columnist Jerome Salton, and I'll read a quick portion here. Open quote, general manager Daryl Morey, hailed as an innovative genius in many corners just a few years ago, has yet to deliver on his stated desire to bring a star player to the Rockets. He accepts the criticism because he hasn't gotten done what he has set out to do, but he continues to preach patience. Period, end quote. Ed, on the other hand, has run out of patience. So you've got the floor, Ed. Tell us why you're mad, son.
So it starts for me with the fact that we're competing with the likes of Paul Allen, Mark Cuban, Mikhail Prokhorov, and some of the wealthiest billionaires in the world. And we can't beat them with money. Jerry Buss, James Dolan, and the Mickey Arisons of the world, we can't beat on location. The small market teams, the poor teams, in essence, in unfriendly recruiting locations, basically they tank and recover, and that's the path to success for the San Antonios and the OKCs and the folks that we see in those types of markets that find success. Every team in the NBA now has analytics, and Morey isn't smarter than everyone else, contrary to the hype and popular belief. Our team, the Rockets, we're boring, we're mediocre, and fans aren't going to the games and the formula, whatever the hell it might be that he and Les Alexander have worked out, isn't working. We lost Rudy Gay in this Shane Battier nonsense, and we haven't gained any ground or any substantial assets in any of the trades that he's made, and he's made several of them. We just keep moving nominal pieces. John Wooden made a statement, and I think it's popular amongst many sports fans, activity must not be mistaken for achievement. And so it's like he keeps moving the pieces and bouncing around from place to place to make it look like the Rockets are in the mix. But the worst place you can be as a professional basketball franchise is mediocre. And at the end of the day, that hurts you in the pocketbooks. Now, I know you guys are going to turn around and say, well, it's Les Alexander's fault because he's made the decision that, you know, he doesn't want to do it the way that works for middle to small market teams. The reality is, as a GM, Morey has a job to do. And if he notices that all of this activity and action isn't getting us anywhere, he has a responsibility to take this team on a different course at the risk of losing his job, because this lack of success is going to get him canned anyway.
Well, wait. Okay. I mean, I don't know which one of us wants to do this, but let me start. So, Ed, so if he does nothing, you're going to kill him. But if he marshals like all these assets in an effort to swing big and get Dwight and get interesting, you didn't like that either. So what? I don't.
Here's my confusion, guys, am I off base? No. Here's the catch with the Dwight deal. And I said this in the email. If we swing for the fences and we get Dwight, and Dwight re-ups with Houston and he stays for more than a year, then it's well worth the effort. If we swing for the fences and we rent Dwight for a year, we don't win a championship, and he ends up signing somewhere else in free agency, and we've given up assets to get him, then what was the point?
Well, who cares about the assets you have?
You actually will have been, if that happens, if scenario two happens, you swing for Dwight, you get him, you can't convince him to stay, so he's out after a year. Then it seems like you're well on your way to being able to tank and start getting those high draft picks.
So then here's the catch.
Could be trying to backdoor Les Alexander.
Another season. We're 3 years, 4 years into mediocrity, where we've had the 14th pick the last 3 years in a row, and all you're drafting, all you end up getting, and disregard my feelings for the players that we drafted in this year's draft, all you end up getting is a bunch of guys that are middle to fair, decent players that you can trade for other decent players.
Right. Well, like, was this the first full year after Yao has retired, has announced that he's retired?
I think it is.
Was this the first season?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It is. He retired in off season, the past off season.
Okay.
What would we say, like, at the time he retired, like, if he were healthy, what would we say about, you know, Dwight's probably the number one center, which would make Yao either two or three, depending on what you think of buying him, right? And you wouldn't have thought that going into last year. Like, this was Bynum's breakout year, so you would have said that Yao was probably one of the one or two best centers in the league, right? Like, I just really don't know how, you know, if let's think about, you know, if the Magic lost Dwight to injury, like, permanently, starting, you know, like last year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I honestly don't know, as soon as Yao
went down.
How long has Yao Ming been unreliable? Well, if I went to work every day with the notion that my best performer was unreliable, why would I continue to build around that person?
Because you would think that maybe eventually it's going to tell, like, you would think that injuries are often like just a matter of luck. And you might say, well, eventually his luck is going to turn around. You know, right. You might say that. You say, well, you know what? I've got talent. I know he wants to play. I know he likes it here. Maybe, you know, next year is the year that he plays 80 games. But beyond that, once Yao was gone, they went and tried to get Paul Gasol. And the NBA struck down that deal. So it's not like it's like as soon as he found out he couldn't get Yao, he made moves to something else.
Paul Gasol has exemplified that he can carry a team to a championship because he did such a good job of that in Memphis.
You thought they were going to win a championship this year? I mean, I'm just sort of.
I'm saying Paul Gasol is not the guy to build around.
I don't know that they were building around it. They were just trying to get
better.
He's
definitely a desirable piece.
Yeah.
Boom.
Only, oh, dog, there are only about four difference makers in the NBA. Like, if you, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you don't have LeBron.
How do teams acquire those guys? When you're the Lakers, you get to trade for them or get them as a free agent. OKC drafted. Cleveland drafted LeBron.
The OKC got lucky.
Orlando drafted Dwight Howard. They drafted Shaq. You get those guys through the draft.
Okay.
Like, let's not act like that formula is broken.
But those teams had to be terrible to have that happen. And it takes a bit of luck to get that. The Bobcats were terrible this year. Like, you could tank like the Bobcats and still end up with the number two pick in a one person draft.
Hey, Kevin was the number two pick.
Yeah, but if the OKC Thunder had the number one pick that year, they would have picked Greg Oden like everybody else.
But they didn't have the number one pick when Orlando had the number one pick.
Luck plays as big a role in this as anything else, though, is what I'm saying.
Right.
They got lucky. The Thunder got lucky. They could have gotten Greg Oden, too. The Bobcats got horrible luck. And now they took MK. MKG, who's not a bad player, but he's not Anthony Davis.
Right. This is why I hate the draft, because even if the Rockets tanked every single game, that doesn't guarantee that they get the number one pick or any of the top three picks. For that matter. So that's kind of the fallacy. And even when they got Yao Ming, they were far from the worst team in the league. They just got lucky with the lottery balls.
Right.
And happened to get him that year. So that's the fallacy in all of this. And my hesitation to endorse or denounce Morey. They're in a bad spot. You know, they're kind of where the Bulls were before they got Derrick Rose. And they were fortunate enough to get that, you know, to have the ping pong balls fall their way. If, you know, if you quote unquote believe in the conspiracy theory or not, but that's kind of where the Rockets are. They're one lottery ball away, you know, from having that spot. They could have had Anthony Davis this year. They could have.
Yes.
You know, the chances weren't as great as the other teams, but there's still a good chance. I mean, you know, so in all
B, I hear you saying that the fallacy is that everybody thinks that, you know, you just tank and you get the number one pick. Am I hearing you correct?
Right. That's not, that just doesn't happen. That's
okay, not, but it's not just the number one pick.
Teams, ask Milwaukee Bucks, you know, ask all of this, the Clippers. There's a bunch of teams that get number one picks over and over and over. And there's a bunch of teams that are perennially bad that never get the number one pick over and over.
You can get the number one pick in a bad year where Andrew Bogut is the number one pick.
It's not just about getting the top pick. It's about getting a top 5, 6, 7 pick, one of those top 10 picks that are different makers. And yes, in any given year.
In the top 10?
What was Dwayne Wade?
Four. But I mean, that was one of the best drafts ever, man.
Okay, what pick was Eric Gordon?
Eric Gordon is a difference maker?
Yes.
Is he with? Okay, wait a minute. No. Did he just play for the Clippers? He played for the Clippers last, like,
the Hornets.
And what did the Clippers do with Eric Gordon?
He was in the trade for Chris Paul. He played for the Hornets. He played like 12 games this year. He was hurt.
Yeah, he's been about as injured as
he was playing for the Clippers, but when he was playing with the Clippers, what were the Clippers doing? I don't understand. Like, he was a difference maker how for the Clippers, though, before that trade? He was a dude putting up numbers, like Kevin Martin.
He put up just enough numbers for David Stern to okay that trade to get Chris Paul.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he.
All right, I bumped off, but I'm back. And the last thing, unfortunately, that I got to say was that Eric Gordon. But there's a long list of players that are contributors to successful teams in this league that are not simply the number one pick. So you laugh when I throw out the name Eric Gordon. He's the best shooting guard under the age of 25.
But what has he done? You said difference maker, though. I mean, he's a dude.
Joel, 5 years, 3, 4, 5 years from now, with the way that Charlotte is now reached, New Orleans is now retweaking, he is the offensive weapon that's going to carry that team. You build those pieces through consecutive drafts where you have top 10 picks. But not just the number one pick.
You know what's funny? What are you asking Morey to do, though? I don't understand. Like, what do you want him to do? Tank?
If you tank, that doesn't guarantee you anything. Right. That's my whole problem with that scenario and my problem with the draft and the lottery in general. Not that the fact that I think it's fixed, but the fact that I think it doesn't reward good teams, good management, it doesn't reward bad teams. And this strategy of tanking, it basically is just this sheer blind luck where you throw a player at some random bad team and hope for the best. Like, literally, New Orleans could win this year, win the lottery this year, get Anthony Davis, barely missed the playoffs, get the lottery again next year and get the number one pick again. Does that make the Hornets front office that much better? Are you rewarding, like, good business, good front office play at that point? No, it's just luck. Yeah.
And here's the thing, because that makes a good point, because the Spurs get a lot of props. I mean, and obviously they've done some things.
And they fell ass backwards into Tim Duncan.
They fell ass backwards. If they don't have Tim Duncan, it doesn't make a difference. None of this happens. Tony Parker, you know?
Even in the early 90s when the Magic were good, they fell ass backwards 1 year in the Penny Hardaway and turned around and did it again with Shaq. It was lucky.
Right.
That's what that franchise is built off of. And that's what a lot of these franchises are built off of is luck. Oklahoma City fell ass backwards into Kevin Durant. They got lucky Portland chose not to take Kevin Durant, you know? So, I mean, and if that didn't happen, Oklahoma City would not be in the position that they're in. So, I mean, that's just my problem with the entire structure of it all. And then that falls into my problem with, you know, how to assess any front office. So that's my problem with the whole draft process as it all, just the luck in it all. It makes it really hard to assess not only Maury, but pretty much every front office.
So, I mean, you say that, but my frustrations with Maury don't just stop with where we keep drafting, because at the end of the day, that's only a part of his job. The most frustrating part to me is in going back and evaluating all of the trades that he's done. I'm not going to say they're net negative, but there hasn't been anything gained from those trades that's propelled the Rockets into this standing where we're a competitor. And the ownership is telling him, as you guys tell me, that, you know, we want to remain competitive while we're rebuilding. But this process isn't going to work if we can't get tangible assets in trades and then have the pieces to entice a superstar to come play in Houston. We're well, 4 years into this process now.
Sans David Stern, he got Powell. And you may not like him to be the cornerstone of your franchise, but he might have been able to flip that into somebody else, including a Dwight. So who's to say that, you know, wasn't a great move that got nixed by something out of his control?
The reason I feel like I can say that it's not is because the pattern is consistent where he just keeps getting nothings. So I'm fairly comfortable evaluating every other trade that he's made and feeling as though, as a fan, like he hadn't brought anything to the table.
Man, anything, huh? I don't know. That just seems really – I think the part of it as a fan
Who's the piece? Who's the piece? Who do you hang your hat on?
No, here's the thing. This is what I'm saying is that, I mean,
I'm going to laugh at you like you laugh when I mention Eric Gordon.
And Gordon's just a dude, man. And Kevin Martin is Eric Gordon.
Dude, okay? He got Powell. It ain't like he almost got Powell. He got him. And they took him away. Like, he got that piece. That shit happened.
Yeah, people like playing with Powell. I mean, why would you want to play with Powell?
His thing in Memphis, he was a beast.
I just think you want him fired. Because if you don't, I mean, he's taking a big chance trying to get Dwight. But, I mean, I'd rather have 1 year Dwight and try to convince him that Houston is a place worth staying than, I mean, basically what you're just saying is, hey, just stay where you are. I mean, I think he's always being aggressive
I'm saying blow up the blueprint. I really would have liked to have been a
That's
fly.
What he's doing. That's what he's trying to do, though, right?
I would have liked to have been a fly on the wall with the whole Rick Adelman conversation and why he was let go. Because Rick Adelman, in my opinion, was significantly better than the Kevin McHale. And so I would like to know what their beef was to the point that Rick Adelman, who was doing a good job with the cheap pieces that he was getting, got let go. He did a hell of a job in Minnesota this year.
I mean, it helps that he had Kevin Love and Mark and Ricky Rubio.
I mean,
that's a pretty good core.
Rick Adelman has been doing his thing in this league for many years.
Wait, he was doing those things with the Rockets. So, I mean, so you didn't have a problem with Rick Adelman a couple of years ago? Or?
That's another problem that I have with Maury. He let Rick Adelman go. I don't have beef with Adelman.
So you want him to change but don't change?
Huh?
So you want him to change but not change? Because he had Rick Adelman, and you had a problem with the Rockets have been doing for the past couple of years.
Bruh, activity is not a substitution for accomplishment. when I say keep Rick Adelman, that's saying that we have a good coach. When I say dump this strategy of trying to stay mid to fair lane, you know, trying to get this 14, 15, 16th pick nonsense, that's
trying
to get that to go.
Your beef is with Les Alexander. That's who your beef is with. Your beef is with Les Alexander and not Daryl Morey, because Les Alexander will not allow Daryl Morey to do what Rich Cho is doing in Charlotte. He won't allow them to unload and become completely uncompetitive.
I mean, if fans stop going to the games, which they have, I mean, I watch Rockets games on TV, and the Toyota Center is half empty.
I mean, that's the NBA, though. I mean, if that's just going to happen. I mean, if your team is not, you know, particularly interesting or young and exciting or like a championship contender, I mean, that's the story of the NBA. I mean, that's what all the labor dispute was about. I mean, teams that were losing money, you know, every night that they have a game, you know, that they're losing money, you know, just by turning on the lights and having games.
All fair and good. 2 years from now, when Morey gets gone, I'll be able to say, I told you so. And if he goes somewhere else and he has success and it's not as a byproduct of using this analytics, I'm the smartest guy, we're going to stay mediocre nonsense, I'll be able to say, I told you. So I'm fairly confident. I'm fairly confident that 2 years from now, I will get to say, I told you so.
So you have a problem with Daryl Morey and his fancy book learning.
With all them long words.
So I guess the pattern is consistent. I want my simple, dumb analysis from ESPN, and yes, I want my GM too.
I hope you end up with Bill Simmons or 2 Chainz as like the GM. Like I want you to have to suffer through that.
And I thought it's out there too. And I'm glad that they finally went to a new format, but Lil Wayne and 2 Chainz and Wale and all those dudes on ESPN First Take. My God, that is just horrible.
Yeah, they've got to stop that.
That's they're rappers for a reason. They know nothing about analysis of sports, and it comes across as such, man. Good.
But 2 Chainz played.
Do
2 Chainz play college ball? If I'm not mistaken,
I've heard that.
Yeah, I heard 2 Chainz. I mean, was it at Wake Forest? Or?
Okay, Clown Brown.
True.
Hey, we had actual tape.
Joe Budden played at TCU.
You know what? He probably did. That might actually be an upgrade.
Even if Smith played college ball, too, but he couldn't tell you the difference between a ball screen and a down screen. I'm telling you, like, she don't talk about it.
Oh man, y'all tripping. Well, let's talk about something that has bedeviled us for years. We're going to talk about football in the off season. And if we're talking football in the off season, it must be college football, right? I can't imagine that we've discussed an issue over the past few years more than the need, or for Ed, the lack of one, for a college football playoff. But now that the college football's commissioners have announced a 4-team playoff that will start December 2014 or January 2015, I'm really at a loss of what's going to take the place as our most hotly contested debate. I mean, will it be, you know, a 8-team or 16-team playoff? Right.
That's probably next. Who's number 5 versus who's number 4.
Yeah, right. Yeah, just like who's the 69th team in the tournament, in the NCAA tournament.
Yes.
But anyway, this is, I mean, you know, like it or not, this is the dawn of a new era of college football. And anybody who grew up frustrated with split national champions, the Boyle Coalition, and BCS should be satisfied if only for a couple of years. And so I guess the question is, what do we think of this and what comes next? So, Shep, what do you think?
Man, when I first saw, you know, the scroll on ESPN, like I really couldn't believe it. Like I thought I was reading a typo. Maybe they let maybe like a test scroll came through, and I didn't know what was going on. But I think it's a great day for college football. I know it. I'm not, you know, so naive to think that it fixes all the problems that are wrong with the system, you know, most notably these kids going out there putting in all this work and not getting paid and all that. But, you know, as far as when it comes to you know, deciding a champion, the postseason, and all that stuff. Like, as a fan of college football, I'm extremely excited about this. You know, I think that this is just great shit. You know, like
what are you excited about specifically?
The prospect of matching up at least, you know, the top four teams and letting them go at it and getting a championship game that's decided that way. The prospect of, you know, after giving this to fans for a little while, you know, how, you know, I imagine fans are going to respond greatly to this and that they will eventually, you know, as we guys mentioned earlier, expand it to 8 teams, 16 teams, whatever it may be. And I think that this is going to add a layer of excitement to the regular season as far as, you know, what it's going to mean when those teams, you know, to start off with, you know, teams that are in fourth, fifth, sixth place, third place even, you know, like how they finish their season, their last few games. I think it's going to really add a layer of excitement to that. And if it does eventually get expanded, which I imagine, I can't imagine it going any direction but to be expanded. You know, I think it's actually going to enhance the regular season even more. You know, like I'm
absolutely,
I'm really excited about what this is gonna, the layers of excitement. Like, I keep using the word excitement, but I'm excited. Goddamn it!
It basically means if you lose one game, whether it be September, October, November, you're not out of it completely for the top teams, at least. I think it's a huge step in the right direction, and hopefully, one, this will lead to, I think getting to 8 will probably be where it stops and it's where it should stop. But I hope that it wasn't going to get to 8 unless we got here first. So big ups to that. At the same time, I do like the bowls, and I like that they found a way to help preserve them. I want to do away with the bowls that are pointless. I do like the bowls.
See, really? See, you about to get me to pop off, dog.
No. Hold on. Ed, I'm right there with you.
Do you realize they took a survey of the players, and the players, more players did not want this playoff as a byproduct of the effect that you're exactly calling for, is that it's going to diminish the bowl system, where what you
How
guys
you call, diminish the minor
point bowl. It's not even pointless. What are we diminishing?
Pointless bowl games, and because they don't appeal to the fans and TV, what you guys call pointless bowl games is what most players are playing for. And but so as that number,
they didn't go anywhere. They still there.
So yeah. What's going to happen? And
they get to play at the Sun Bowl, but the Vitalis Sun Bowl.
Is that if you work in the direct, like it's
funny, Brady's.
It's funny, y'all, but like the players don't get anything, man. There's 100 plus teams. 4 teams get to participate in this playoff. If it grows to 8, you're going to scrape some of the tail end bowl games out of the system. And these kids who spend an entire season, spend entire years working for something, have nothing to play for.
Listen. That's one thing that sports teaches you. If you go 6-6, you don't get rewarded.
Yeah.
That's one thing that sports. There's two things I was going to say on top of that from the bowls.
All teams get to participate in the tournament, so nobody cries for them because 65 teams get to go. Who gives a
fuck
about
320 basketball teams? It's proportional. So I'm going to say this. I was going to say is I hope that if we get now that we're at 4, if we get to 8, I was hoping that two things happen. One, we get to a system where if you go undefeated, you can't be left out. And I don't know if that's 4 or 8, whatever it is. I hope we get there. And two, I hope we get to a point where this thing grows to the point where there's so much money going back and forth that they have no choice but to pay these kids something.
It's a bait and switch. Give them a playoff and they'll stop talking about the field hands getting paid.
No, because they're going to bid the championship game out for all kinds of money. They're going to bid the TV rights for all kinds of money. The numbers that we've been talking about for this.
Forgive me. The general fan has been complaining about players getting paid for years.
Ooh. Right.
Or no, am I mistaken? Fans have been complaining about a playoff system, and now any noise that was beginning to build about paying players will subside.
No, it won't subside. They'll be thrown into the pot where people will get more more aware.
Because like I think you know you could point to a guy like Bomani Jones who wasn't he seemed kind of nonplussed by this whole thing. Maybe I'm misreading this, but he seemed kind of nonplussed by this whole thing because you know there's been this game added on these kids' schedule who aren't getting paid. You know, so it's just another chance to go out and get injured.
Max is going to get $400 to $500 million, and the players are not.
Okay, but Ed, but I mean, having a playoff or not having a playoff is not going to change that. The thing is with the bowl executives, it's not like they were in this for altruistic reasons to help kids. If anything, they suck municipalities dry. They take tax breaks, and basically the only people that get paid through bowls are bowl executives. And what ends up happening is that most schools lose money on bowls. Like that's like you can't argue that because that is what happened. So it's not like the kids were closer to getting paid in the previous system and they're further away from it now. There's not a real legitimate movement to pay these kids because they don't have really anybody in their corner. There's not a block of people that are going to help them. There's not any representation that's going to help them get paid. But in terms of the actual aesthetic of the game and enjoyment of the game, I mean, that's what this is about.
Said sliced bread.
You can have the New Mexico Bowl if you really wanted it. This will be on TV on December 1st.
You went from randomly picking two teams to now randomly picking four teams. Oh my joy.
Okay. Well, Ed, what I don't understand is from you, why do you prop up these bowls to be such a great experience for these kids?
The same
bowls that are sucking the system dry of the same money that you want to pay these kids. But you act like this shit. You act like they're doing us a service by being in existence. They're doing the exact opposite. And you like it on both ends of the spectrum. It's killing me. Like, I don't know what are you talking about?
The bowls are not necessarily sucking the system dry in the capacity that you're presenting it. Football and basketball pay for every other sport on campus. So if we want to talk about folks sucking the system dry, all of the money generated by those two sports pays for everybody else. The bowl system creates a end of season celebration for the players when in the offhand that they're not getting anything. When you get to go to a bowl game, you actually get something. So you can shit on the bowls all you want, but at least they give back to the players, unlike every other sport on campus that ain't giving me shit.
They're not giving back. Most schools lose money going through bowls. What are they giving back?
You're talking about a PlayStation. They might get a PlayStation or a watch.
Fuck a PlayStation. What's a PlayStation going to do for kids?
I don't agree with him, but I think Ed's point there might be that, you know, they've made all this money in the first place for the other sports. Why shouldn't they get to splurge on themselves a little bit towards the end of the season?
They lose money.
Yeah, it may not be a smart splurge.
Getting a bonus and going out and burning it in the trash and calling it a great time. Like, that's not a bonus.
Some people like to make it rain, some people like 401ks. Talk to some
former college football players who either do or don't get their degrees and go on to like menial lives, not in professional sports. They will tell you that their 4 years in school was the best time in their lives. And more than that, if they were on a team that went to bowl games four consecutive years, it's probably only time they will ever get to travel and have the experience that people generally have because they're not going to get paid playing their sports. For many people, it doesn't necessarily create the opportunity that college should create for them. It's a really big deal to the players.
But wait a minute. Hold on. I would
really like y'all to talk to players.
Hey, Ed, I talked to players, and I played on a team with this app. I understand what you're talking about, but first of all, I don't understand what this has to do with the playoff because the bowl games are still going to exist.
Right.
Like, I mean, that's not like the bowl games are not going anywhere unless they can't afford to earn their keep or schools just say, you know what? We're not going to take a $250,000 loss to go play in fucking Albuquerque. Right. So the bowl games are still going to be there. That's fine. I don't know it. I mean, B said that some of the bowl games will go away and that might happen. It may lessen the importance of them, but Shreveport wants to have the independent bowl.
That's more likely to happen.
The Shreveport wants to have the Independence Bowl, and they're going to do whatever it damn well takes to keep that bowl game there. And that's going to happen irrespective of whether or not Michigan, USC, Florida, and Texas are playing in a 14 tournament. I don't,
right.
And that's why I'm saying we should. I get what you're saying. I think the experience is worthwhile and all of that, but I mean, like, I don't know what that has to do with the playoff system.
And on top of that, I'm much less worried about giving 6-6 teams the satisfaction of going to Albuquerque or Shreveport than I am about giving an undefeated team, regardless of the conference, the opportunity to play for it all. To me, if I have to make trade-offs, I take the latter every day, all day, and twice on Sunday. And that's the nature of sports. That's what it teaches us. That makes it so great. Everybody can't win. And we stop giving out trophies to everybody in Little
League.
You're
talking about the difference between celebrating two additional playoff teams versus
half teams in the league, which is ridiculous. That ain't what sports is about. That ain't what college sports is about. Sports is about rewarding excellence, rewarding people who do well. 6-6 is not cause for celebration to go take a trip to go play 6-6 team.
I'm game with that if we're talking about the pros. We're not talking about the pros. We're talking about a system that's fundamentally screwed up.
Well, okay. But nothing changes. That's what I'm saying. This doesn't change the fact that the system
right.
is.
So what are we
just talking about improving the game. We're just talking about
champion.
Like every other level of sport, every other level of sport college football is the upper level of college football is the only level of sport that does not have some sort of tournament to determine its champion.
You do have a tournament, or you did have a tournament. You
had a
tournament for the championship.
Here's
a tournament championship. So let's not pretend that nothing existed. All you've had is two more arbitrary teams being added to this process.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, you run
you
the
best.
They're pulling them out of a hat?
Number two.
Yeah. It's, no,
they're pulling those teams out of a hat.
It's not like Wake Forest is going to be playing in the Rose Bowl, dog.
Yeah, let's be real. You're exactly right, Joel. This hasn't changed anything other than the fact that it's come closer to giving us a truer sense of who the best team in college football is. It's not all the way there. And hopefully we get there at some point. And if it doesn't, at least it's going to hopefully it gets us to the point of compensating players for everything that they're doing along these lines.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about, because you know what, Ed, I mean, I don't know. Are you going to be somebody that's going to miss the BCS?
In reality, the BCS isn't necessarily going away either. I mean, we're just restructuring the format of those bowl games and tournaments to accommodate these two extra teams in what's now deemed a playoff. Like, the game ain't changing. Like, everybody's celebrating and the game ain't changing.
I mean, it's changed a little bit.
Yeah, it's changed a little bit.
So. Not for me.
I mean, not for you, but in reality, like, the game has changed a little bit. What hasn't changed?
Four and two are different numbers.
And this is what I'm saying. Like, if you're like, the game ain't changed, then why are you mad about the bowls? Like, if the game ain't changed, you're still going to get the same shitty-ass bowls and the same 6-6 teams playing in them that you want to prop up. So why are you mad at all?
Yeah.
If nothing's changed.
So I really don't have a beef with y'all making fun of like the bowl games and the role that they play in communities, et cetera, et cetera.
They don't play a role in communities, but okay.
They don't.
However you want to present that, that's cool.
Okay.
But
there's empirical data.
I'm not even going to debate that because we've had those debates and we disagree. I'll agree to disagree on that. At the end of the day, for me, this thing is about the players. And like y'all get some sense of satisfaction that, one other undefeated team now may get a chance to play in a playoff to prove that they're the best and blah, 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 blah. But for the whole group, I don't see this as a plus. I see this as a negative.
I don't understand, though, because if the game hasn't changed, how is it how does it all of a sudden go to a negative? Like, either it's static or it's not. Like,
in the here and now, with adding these two teams, it really doesn't do anything for me. I know it does a lot for you guys, and Shep's really excited about it, and so are a lot. But at the end of the day, if you eventually get to eight, or before you even get to eight, you start to slowly eliminate bowl games on the back end. It really does have a detrimental impact to me, to players that play the game, make fun of 6-6 teams, make fun of 8-4 teams all you want. Like, these kids aren't getting anything. And they're
I'm not making fun of them. I'm just calling them what they are and saying that they shouldn't be a reward on the back end for mediocrity. That's not what sports is built to do.
And they're going to get less.
But who's going to get less? Sports,
basketball players have it better than football players, because you're in the season tournament, playoff, whatever you want to call it, contribute so much more to each of you as individual players. And the fact that you only have 12 to 15 players on each basketball team, they tend to get more on most campuses than the football players do. Like, football players really don't get shit, and they pay for every other sport on campus.
Okay. But I mean, like I said, none of that is changing. That is all going to be
exactly
going to be right. I mean, all these things are still going to be true.
Games, and you're not a players, it is ultimately going to change and diminish what the players get, while the system gets $400 to $500 million more.
Wait, I don't understand. But you see, that's a projection that, like, I don't know. I don't know what the basis.
That number is not real, right? When B was popping that number up months ago, before, during the whole argument, you were live by die by, but not
wait,
a number.
Wait, no, what number? Wait a minute. What number? Who you? Hold on, dog, mad rapper. What are you talking about? Which one? Which number? Which number?
$400 to $500 million more dollars that this playoff system stands to generate college football.
That's fine. How's it going to hurt players in the back? I don't understand. How's it going
to
hurt?
To be clear, I was saying that 400 to 500 was a number that they estimate a playoff could get. This one, I'm not entirely sure. It may be around that number, but if it is around that number, Ed, all I'm saying is that's that much more money into the pot where people can start to point at and say these players aren't getting that. But that's where I hope.
Somebody's going to champion that.
No, I hope that people will. I don't know.
Like, hey, the scholarship, fuck them.
So wait, they should have less money.
That?
They should have less money, and people should be people should still, like, not be inclined to say the player should get
right.
paid.
If there's
then,
fewer
like, a baseball
money,
team
if there's,
should get cut.
Like, yeah, if there's lesser money in the pot, people are going to be lesser inclined to pay guys. The more money that they see they're getting screwed out of, my hope is the more champions that we get behind this particular cause. Now that we have the playoff, quote unquote, behind us, people can focus on this as a cause to champion. That's what I hope. I don't know that that's going to happen, Ed. And you seem to think that the opposite is going to happen, but neither of us know.
The next book that gets written is Death to the Non-Paid Player.
Well, I mean, that's great. I think we all would get by. I don't think anybody on here. I mean, I'm a fierce advocate for especially college football players getting paid, because when you look at the simple fact that, I mean, they're also being exposed to CTE. Like, I mean, their brains are also being beat in as well for free, essentially. So I'm all for that. And we've argued about the best way to do that. I think the college football players should have a union as some sort of representative team, you know, some sort of representation at the table that is not tied to the university in some sort of way. So I'm all with that. But what we're saying here is that it makes it a little bit more fair for teams that are excellent to have a claim at the championship. The year that TCU won the Rose Bowl, they were undefeated. They beat the Big Ten champion, and they were still number two. Like, they were undefeated in number two. And, like, that just, I mean, I'm not just saying that because I'm a TCU fan, because we could point to Auburn in 2004 when they were undefeated and won the Sugar Bowl, and, you know, they were number two. Like, I'm just saying, like, we know what it is. We know
real
it's just.
Real talk, I wouldn't have the balls to do this, but if I'm like a Cam Newton, like, I'm not playing an extra game. Like, I got $24 million waiting for me at the next level. Like, I'm not playing an extra game.
But why would you play those games anyway and you're not getting paid? Like, I don't understand. Like, why would Cam Newton pay in the Outback Bowl, for instance? Like, yeah, that's even more. Yeah, so say the system stays the same. Cam Newton has put up crazy numbers. Auburn went 8-4 and plays in the Outback Bowl. I'd be less inclined to play in the Outback Bowl than a national semifinal.
That's the next movement. I need to start getting trying to get players to just scrap it all.
All right.
But the problem is to get people to adopt that on the mass level. There's one Cam Newton on that team, and there's 84 other scholarship athletes that need that game, if only to improve their draft stock or to just play a college game because they're not going to get to the next level. So,
or to maintain their scholarship.
Right. So it sounds good. It's a great soundbite, but it's not real. That's not reality.
Right. Reality is we got an additional game now, or two games, excuse me, and the noise is going to stop. And I really don't think that there's going to be a lot to be said about this system that, I hate
to use this word. It's one extra game for two teams. It's one extra game for two teams, though, by the way.
And that's cool. But there's less that's going to be said about this system that's abusive of the people that actually produce on the field.
I don't think that's going to stop Taylor Branch.
Ed, you should rephrase that to be a statement of opinion, not fact. That's what you think is going to happen. I hope the opposite happens.
Yeah, I don't think Taylor Branch, a Deadspin, a Bomani Jones, or us, or anybody else is going to stop advocating that these guys should get paid. Like, I don't.
Right.
I'm still committed to that.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm happy that you are very interested in the preservation of the Las Vegas Bowl and the Boise Humanitarian Bowl and the Motor City Bowl.
First time I ever got a chance to go to Hawaii was a byproduct of going to a bowl game. I'm in a fortunate position that, you know, my life has taken me places that I could go back on my own accord. But I know that a lot of guys that contributed to the game of college football ain't get nothing out of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's fine. I wouldn't say that they got nothing out of it, but
there's
they got opportunity to go to college. I think the guys should get paid, but I mean, getting an opportunity to go to college, like colleges could not have football teams like in every other country in the world. And right. You know what I'm saying? So like, don't act like it's nothing that they get to spend. They get a free education too, though. I mean, because that is something.
It's nothing. It's not nothing, but it's not equitable,
right,
for a lot of these guys. But yeah, I hear you.
All right.
Okay. I just wanted to rain on that parade.
I know you did. I know you did, Mad Rapper.
You did a great job with that. You did a real good job.
Well, first, we didn't even talk about the damn playoff.
No, we didn't.
I'm sure we'll have plenty of more time about that.
That's a good point. We didn't talk about any like the mechanics of it, how they're going to pick the teams, like where they playing the games at. Like, this bullshit.
I'm confused. I'm confused. I still don't know why he's mad. I just know that he is.
First of all, who is you to be asking me questions?
fantastic. Well, for those of you who are joining us for the first time, we close off on our last segment is shout outs. It's much quicker than the other segments, but it's just our chance to shout out or shout down, you know, whatever is going on as of late in our lives. So we'll start with Shep for shout outs. What you got, B?
Yo, man, I want to shout out John Roberts.
Chief Justice.
Yeah, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court pulling the surprise move of finding an alternative justification for Obamacare outside of the Commerce Clause.
Quit calling it Obamacare, man.
No, yeah. They've embraced it.
What is it?
The Affordable Care Act, ACA. Oh.
Yeah, I've always been sort of weird about Obamacare as well. I think it's
when you thought it was going to get shut down, though. But now it's like John Roberts has done his thing. It's propped up, so they're going to embrace the name.
Well, my understanding is that the administration had, you know, at first they were against like the public stance against it, but they weren't really happy with the term because it was being used, you know, like as a pejorative, but like my understanding was that they came to embrace it after a while. Okay. Obamacare, you know, we'll brand it that way. And his name will be forever linked to it and all that stuff, assuming that, you know, it was going to be a successful plan and people would be happy about it and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, the ACA, you know, whatever makes the people's boat float. Shout out to the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Go ahead and shout out LeBron for winning that championship. Shout out James Harden, man. God, just
because he need a hug.
Yeah, man. I just want to hug his beard, dog. That poor bastard.
What did they say homeboy was playing? They said he was playing and basically money was just might have been falling out of his pocket. Like a trails of money just falling as he runs down the court.
Yeah.
Hey, Joe, you know what he was playing, right?
It was a
struggle ball.
Yeah, he was a struggle ball.
Pound struggle ball.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah, man. He was a struggle ball MVP of the playoffs, basically.
Ooh, yes, he was.
Yeah, man. So you know, yeah, those three, man. Poor James. I hope he comes back stronger next year. Actually, you know, shoot, maybe your boy Morey could go after him. Joel. I mean Ed. You know,
Morey.
Get him to sign up. Because, yeah, he's about to be a free agent along with Serge Ibaka. So, yeah, shout out to all those three.
All right, good stuff, man. B, what's up, man?
Got a couple. Want to shout out to the NBA draft. I know we didn't talk much about it, but I still feel like this is one of the most terriblest drafts in a while. As highlighted by
Stop.
A kid with no discernible skills being the number two pick overall, but it's all good.
Don't eat those words about this draft, though.
You are, man. I'm still. We need to put some money on the fact that I think Deion Waiters is going to be terrible.
There's a reason he went from bottom first round, mid first round to number four. Kid's a baller.
Which a good bet?
Darko Milicic went second.
I want to bet the career of Deion Waiters versus.
Don't do Josh Selby. Don't. Don't put Josh Selby in.
No, I'm doing. I want to do. Well, we are, and that's a done bet. That's over. But let's. I want to go Waiters versus MKG.
Okay.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah. See, intriguing, right?
Yeah. Let's figure something out on that.
But yeah, we'll talk about MKG this draft and the Tebow narrative and how that all fits in next show. Hopefully, I also want to shout out. Chris Brown, Drake, Meek Mill, and Tony Parker for obvious reasons.
Hey, man, let me tell you something real quick before you go. Man, that club had to have some badass women that night, though. Like you think all those dudes showed up? I mean,
yeah. Hey. I mean, that's it. Hey, look, Pillow Fight 2012. I'm all for it. And I want to shout out the Nevada Department of Corrections housing your boy Floyd Mayweather for the next 60 to 70 days. He said he wasn't getting like gourmet meals, so he was refusing what they were serving him.
The man is being held in inhumane conditions. It's highlighting the problem of our prison industrial complex, and I'm happy that Floyd Mayweather has stepped to the forefront to be the face of our prison industrial complex.
And on that note, though, to be fair, I want to shout out to Manny Pacquiao, who, by all accounts, won that last fight, even though I see his skills diminishing and corroding. So he's just primed for Floyd Mayweather to do his thing against Pacquiao. So shout out to all that.
My God, he got robbed. That was so terrible.
Yeah. But that said, though, I mean, 2 years ago, it wouldn't have been close. You know, his skills are diminishing, and which is fine. It's natural, although, you know, it's ironic that people think he's on some kind of performance enhancers. But his skills seem to be declining. That fight against Marquez, people thought he lost that.
Yeah.
But yeah, if something does happen this year, next year, I think it's I would, if I was a betting man, I'd put my money on Floyd Mayweather, absolutely.
I see that. All right. Thank you, B. Well, if B's done, Ed, you're up.
I'd like to shout out to Johan the Beast Blake for knocking off fellow countryman Usain Bolt in the 100 and the 200 and the Jamaican qualifiers for the Olympics. But, you know, to do it on this stage, it really doesn't mean anything. So you got to prove it again at the Olympics. Shout out to LT Gray on his 74th victory. Still no majors since his return. Done. The goose is cooked. Happy Trails, MKG.
Why are you always tap dancing on Tiger's grave? Like, what he do here?
B, I'm feeling you, man. Happy Trails, MKG, Michael Kidd, Gilchrist. You're going down the same path as Kwame Brown and Adam Morrison.
Stop.
Top picks by Michael the Ego Jordan. Shout out to the college football teams making the move this July 1st, transitioning West Virginia, TCU, Missouri, A&M, and Boise State as they flip the script. And then the out of the loop salute this week is going to 19-year-old Sloan Stevens on some gentlemanly scholar type thing. You know what I'm saying? She was the young African-American female at Wimbledon. Hopefully we see a lot more from her in the coming years. We'll get the picture up on the Tumblr. But you know, like to see a productive career for that young lady.
Well, good stuff, bro. All right. You took my Johan Blake thing, man. I find it amazing that Usain Bolt is not even possibly the best sprinter in his own country.
Whoa, slow down. Remember the injuries.
That's true. I mean, it's not like he didn't run a 9.8 and a 19.8, though. I mean, it's not, you know, he's not, I mean, those are, I don't even know how to quantify if those are bad times for him. And not, you know, a dude running 19.8 and be like, well, he was hurt. So.
Like that's the catch is that Johan is going to have to beat him on the world stage.
Yeah.
And by the way, happy trails to the U.S. dominance in the 100 relay. Because we're about to get smoked by Jamaica.
Oh yeah. They, I mean, we've ceded that crown to them, man. Them yams, boy. I tell you,
the plantains.
Yeah,
it's the mangoes, man.
The mango.
They just wanted more.
They're more clutch. Well, it doesn't help that our best sprinter got out of prison like about a year ago, Justin Gatlin. I mean, really, like our best sprinter was in prison. that's an issue. But my shout out. I'm going to start out. I got actually a lot of things. I want to make them real quickly. I want to shout out. Let me start out with some hugs because I know Shep did it. I want to hug Perry Jones III and Jared Sullinger, man. Because look, this is all part of my argument for why John Selby needed to get the hell out of school when he did. Because man, those dudes left a shitload of money on the table when they came back to school this past year, and maybe they would have been exposed anyway. But at least they would have been lottery picks and millionaires many times over compared to
lost it all anyway. Both of them. So.
Oh man! Damn, that's some cold-blooded shit.
I know. Oh damn!
On many levels, that's cold-blooded because I'm trying to figure out the many. You're imagining them losing their money.
I mean, you just called him Antoine Walker. Well, I don't know what is it.
It's like 50% of the more than 50% of these guys lose every dime they've received. So I mean, but for me to say that is literally. Is more of a reality of happening than not.
Think about how much more money and how much more fun they could have had losing, though, if they had started. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, man.
Shouts to those guys. I want to also shout out the Dream Team documentary, which I have watched twice at this point. That was fantastic. Did you guys see the Dream Team doc?
Oh, yeah.
I still haven't been able to see it.
Okay.
You got to check that one out.
You got to check it out. It's dope. I actually wish it was like 3 or 4 hours long. But it was pretty incredible. I also would like to shout out another documentary, the Marley documentary, about Bob Marley, clearly. I saw it maybe about a month ago at this point, and it was just fantastic. I mean, you know, I always say, like, you know, MLK's life was sort of boiled down to the I Have a Dream speech, and sort of like the radicalism was stripped out of his life. Well, with Bob Marley, like, his life was incredible. Like, I mean, literally, like, I mean, you have to watch it. I mean, I just had gained such a newfound appreciation for the guy and everything that he had done and what he was about. I mean, you know, he's a lot more than, you know, everything's going to be all right. I think, you know, the documentary is a great start. I'm going to get some biographies on the cat and read up on him. So that's the best thing a documentary can do. It can make you more interested in somebody. So shouts to that. And I guess my final shout is going to be, well, two, actually. To LaDainian Tomlinson, my former, I guess we were teammate for a couple years, who retired, I guess it would have been about a week ago, and certainly is going to go into the Hall of Fame. And I just remember when he was a country-ass dude from Marlin, Texas, with a gold tooth in the front of his mouth, and he was, you know, a shy kid, and now, you know, he's, you know, ending his career as the fifth leading rusher of all time in the NFL. And that's just, I mean, that's a hell of a leap. We're not talking about a dude who came in like highly touted, like Adrian Peterson or something like that. So, man, I really had a lot of respect for that dude, and he deserves everything that he ever got. And, I'm really happy for him. So shouts to him. And, I think that's it, actually. I don't know. Do you want to, should we shout out Aaron Andrews for making the move over to Fox Sports? Y'all heard about that?
Yeah.
No.
I want them to take Dr. Lou with them. I want Dr. Lou off my fucking TV. So please take them. So I'm not going to be watching Fox anyway. So
yeah, Michelle Beadle hit NBC though.
Man, Michelle Beadle.
Yeah. I know. Hey, Z's all the way around.
I know, right?
That's the truth.
Yeah, Ed, you got one. You said you got another shout out.
Yeah, since we were in and out on the Maury segment, I'd be remiss if I didn't close with a shout out to Omer Asik and Daryl Maury. Omer Asik to the rescue!
Hey man, he's a good defensive big man though.
Oh, that's fancy. That's fancy.
Yeah, all right.
Good.
Wait, man, you got your boy T. Jones and everybody else, so there's a little bit to look forward to. And B's boy, Jeremy Lamb, you know what I'm saying? So there's some pieces there.
I am really happy for the pieces we got. I don't know how long any of them are going to get to stick around, because, you know, Daryl Morey's favorite thing to do is trade people, so it'll be like 2 to 3 years max for all of them.
Oh, man, all right. All right. Well, on that note, I guess Ed got in his final shot at Maury, and we'll end it on that note. So at any rate, this is the 39th episode of Out of the Loop. Thanks for listening again. Again, you can go to the iTunes store, click on podcast, and then do a search for Out of the Loop and subscribe. You can also hit us on Tumblr at ootloop.tumblr.com. Twitter at OOTLoop610, and try us an email as well, which is OOTLoop@gmail.com. So for Ed, B, and Shep, this is Joel in Atlanta. On the hottest day in Atlanta history, I thank you all for listening, and we'll be back soon.
God above me, I'm just the God of everything else. I'll put holes in everything else. New God flow, fuck everything else. Supreme dope dealer. Write it in bold letters. They love a nigga spirit like Pocket the Coachella. They said Push ain't fit with the umbrella, but I was good with the Ye as a wholesaler. I think it's good.